Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you're listening to Mushing Radio here on KVRF 89.5 in the Mattsu Valley, RadioFreePalmer.org. You can find all of our episodes over on DogWorksRadio.com. We're also on social media under the same name, and be sure to check us out over on Apple Podcasts. And joining us, calling in from California, is our co-host for Mushing Radio, Alex. How's it going?
It's going great, Robert. And I do want to encourage people to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or Google Play Music, if anyone gets their podcasts on Google Play Music. And please also leave a review. It's very helpful not only to let us know what we're doing right, but also it helps us get bumped up a little bit in the rankings and helps more people discover the show. And also, you can just share the show with someone. If you like the show and see it on social media, on Facebook or on Twitter, feel free to retweet or share that post with friends of yours who might be interested in this show.
We are going to talk about something that is a difficult topic to talk about. I know in the last few weeks we've had a lot on our plates in regards to doping allegations and sanctions for one mushing or another or not, a lot of praise and vitriol from the mushing community and its fans. But now we're going to switch gears a little bit and talk about what is next for the sport of mushing. You know, in this crazy climate, aside from all of the news that has happened over the last month or so in Iditarod, and with all of the negative publicity that has gotten over the last year or so from the animal rights groups and from documentaries that have been released and people have seen and commented on it being false or a bad narrative, there are other things at play that I think are just as detrimental to the sport as all of this PR stuff. And these are things that we cannot necessarily control, at least from a humanistic perspective. Is that right, Alex?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's a challenging time in a lot of ways in various areas of life, but it's definitely a challenging time for mushing going forward. And you can view that one of two ways. You can view it as looking at the negative aspects and thinking this is horrible, we will never be able to adapt and survive. Or you can look at it in the other way and think, well, this really gives us the opportunity, this really gives us the chance to be a little bit more creative and to perhaps reconceive some of the things about the sport and find different ways for it to move forward.
Right. And I have two, maybe three topics I would like to talk about, and hopefully we can get some fans' perspective about how they hope to follow the race in the future, or not the race, but the sport in the future, and what they perceive as, you know, sort of challenges going forward. My first two items, one is the weather economy and the economy of Alaska in particular. Number one, as we all know, the weather is changing. In particular here in Alaska, it is becoming much more difficult to not only train our dogs as if we had, you know, even a decade ago, but things are changing in the way that Mother Nature is dealing its hand that is providing it or proving it to be very difficult for mushers to be able to train at the level that they have done in the past. And this, it is much more prevalent here in South Central Alaska than most of Alaska in general. There is a large contingent of mushing kennels within about a 50-mile radius of Anchorage. That's where all of the, you know, the big profile kennels are in terms of John Roe and Booser and Reddington And all of those folks live within that area. Very high-profile kennels are right there in that area of South Central. And, of course, there's many, many other teams, myself included, that are in what they call the Anchorage Bowl. And I have been here for 7 years now, and over those 7 years, we've had two good winters. Last winter, and I believe it was the winter of 11 and 12, where we've gotten substantial snow and have been able to run on trails for the entire winter without, taking substantial time off to be able to do so. So what that means is as Mother Nature deals its hand with the snow conditions and the winter, the length of winter and so on, it's causing people to rethink their training strategy. Races are being canceled all of the time, and they're not just for economic reasons, but they're for weather reasons and all sorts of things. And it's just a much different mushing climate today than it was a decade ago. And a great example of that is the beginning of a dryland mushing season here in South Central Alaska. That had not occurred up until 4 years ago, and now it's becoming very popular for folks to get in dryland mushing, and that's typically on carts or scooters or bike drawing or running or something of that nature, where you're not on snow, you're not on sleds, and that's becoming very popular here with mushers of all types, including the recreational musher that may only have a couple of dogs, all the way up to the bigger kennels that may have 20, 30, or 40 dogs in their kennel. They're coming out to run in these early season events. So I think that's where Mother Nature is coming. And my second one is going to be the economy, but I would like to ask Alex, do you have any thoughts on the Mother Nature point of this in regards to the future of mushing?
Yeah, what that really does is it takes, if there's not enough snow, especially in and around Willow, then what that means is that in order to train on snow, people are going further and further north. They're going up to Denali. They're going up towards Fairbanks. And what that means is that the people who have jobs, the people who are working full-time jobs and then training at night, aren't able to just pack up their lives and go north for weeks at a time in order to train with their dogs. So those people are either being shut out of the race or they're having to, scale back their plans and save up money so that they can take an entire winter off to train, or they are entering the race where they don't have as much experience with their dogs on snow. And so we've talked a lot about the bond between the mushers and the dogs. And if you are with a team that is not, that doesn't have a lot of experience with you on snow, that's going to potentially cause problems or potentially lead to the dogs not being able to go as fast or to trust the musher in terms of the conditions. So I think that over time is going to cut out a group of mushers who traditionally have come up, have worked jobs that give them some flexibility, but still are regular jobs. And it's going to, change the emphasis to people who either can make enough money during the non-winter season so that they don't have to work at all in the winter, or people who, people who are just so successful or have such great sponsorship levels that they can afford to spend more time training and more time away.
And that leads into my second concept to this is the economy. And first off, for folks that are not living here in Alaska, our economy is much the same as it was for the rest of the U.S. during the recession in the mid-2000s, in 2009, 2010, 2011. We're experiencing that right now. Many people have lost their jobs. The oil prices have plummeted. Lots of retail shops have closed. It's just a down economy here in Alaska compared to how it was even 4 or 5 years ago. And I think that took a lot of people aback pretty quickly. We didn't really see it coming. I mean, it felt literally like we woke up one night and, you know, the price of oil, which is our main economic generator here in Alaska, just plummeted overnight. It was like we lost billions of dollars in state revenue literally overnight. And that is a very difficult thing for not only just the residents of Alaska, but also for the mushers of Alaska. It's definitely a much different economic time than it was a few years ago. How does this hurt mushing? First and foremost, I think it hurts sponsorships for the bigger races, whether it be them pulling out because their business isn't doing so well, or the mom and pop businesses that can't give the smaller donations, in particular to the smaller races, like a lot of the qualifying races that depend on these smaller mom and pop races or sponsors. It may be the mom and pop print shop that donates banners and cards and advertising materials, and they just don't have it in the budget to give that out anymore. It could be, the restaurant chain, the local restaurant chain that gave a nice monetary sponsorship, and they can no longer do that anymore because, you know, people that have lost their jobs or have taken pay cuts don't eat out as often, so therefore they cannot justify large sponsorship commitments because the people just aren't in the seats of their restaurant. Secondly, the economy, I believe, is going to hurt those folks that you mentioned a minute ago about that sort of middle-of-the-tier, middle-of-the-pack type mushers who are not the professional mushers, who do not have the big sponsors, who are not able to take those weeks or even months off at a time to go train. And sort of right now, the watermark or the tide mark of our snow conditions is the Denali Highway, which is almost a 200-mile drive from that Anchorage Bowl that I mentioned earlier. And the reason I say that is, you know, there's that old saying by old song by R.E.M. What is the song about the world is ending as we know it?
It's the end of the world as we know it.
Yeah, and I was thinking about this morning when I was driving in. Now, I don't want to sound like Chicken Little, but it sounds very, very controlling in regards to what we're dealing with right now in terms of the mushing world is changing as we know it, and I think the economy is one of those. And I know we always compare and contrast on other sports, Iditarod, and I was thinking about the NBA, and I know you and I talked about this off-air. At any given point in the NBA, there is always those top five teams that are going to be in the playoffs every single year. You think about the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Utah Jazz, and, you know, those big-name teams are always there. And then you have a next segment, and they're the five teams or so that could make a run at any given point. They may be in, you know, the playoffs this year, but out next year, et cetera, et cetera. They're sort of those emerging teams that are sort of that next level. And then you have 20 teams in NBA that just aren't very good. They have no chance of ever winning. They have no chance of moving up to the playoffs. They have no chance of attracting that big marquee spot in the sport. And I think about mushing in very much the same way. You have those top 20 or so teams that are just the powerhouses, and then you have those very strong middle of the pack folks that could make a run for it at any given moment. And I'm thinking about one team in particular, Jessie Royer's team last year, who was just phenomenal. I mean, she moved up and jumped right into that spot that I was talking about. And then you have all of those middle to the back of the Packers that just are there to race. Those are the folks that I think are going to be the most affected by this economy and of course, how it ties into the weather as well. They just don't have the resources. They don't have the sponsors. They don't have the ability to pack up and move, you know, their entire lifestyle north for even if it's 3 or 4 days or a week or two at a time, because somebody has to stay back at the dog lot. Somebody has to stay to take care of the dogs and to hold down the fort, so to speak. So those are the ones I think that are going to be most affected by the economy and the ones that are the drivers of the sport. And one last portion of that, again, I think it's very much economy driven, is we just don't have the junior musher support that we had years ago. And I think a lot of that comes back putting on a high caliber team. And if the parents of the mushers don't have the money to support the junior mushers' aspirations of running Iditarod or junior Iditarod or whatever it is, those kids are not given the opportunities to run in the junior races, and it's sort of a trickle-down effect. If those guys aren't running in the juniors, we don't have any quote-unquote new blood to come into the sport as Iditarod mushers or Yukon Quest mushers. We just aren't seeing the leap forward from the younger generation to the older generation. As we've talked about on many occasions, most of Iditarod in particular is ran by three or four or five very powerful kennels, where they have teams that come in as B teams or puppy teams or lease teams or whatever, and then you have all of the other guys and gals in the back. So those are my thoughts on this in terms of sort of how mushing will change or evolve over the next decade or so, and it's going to be a troubling time, and that is apart from all of the news that has came out over the last couple of weeks to a month about all of the PR disasters. I think that these issues are issues that are difficult to kind of wrangle in and control. What are your thoughts in regards to economy, and what are your thoughts as we move forward as a fan and how you would like to see moving forward from where it stands today and possibly into the next decade to come?
You know, I think that specifically with the economy, what I see as a potential that might happen, and it worries me a lot, is basically what happened to the music industry in the early part of the 2000s, which basically is that the middle fell out. And it used to be that there were a lot of people, a lot of musicians who were able to make a living in music, who were able to not ever get to the superstar level, but able to make a nice, comfortable middle-class living in music. And after that happened, after there was the big shakeup, what happened was the people at the top, so your Bruce Springsteens and your U2s and your Metallicas, they were fine. The people at the very bottom, you know, the people who are playing in bar bands and who have day jobs and who are just doing music as a hobby, they were fine. There was still a lot of demand for that. But that group in the middle, where people could actually make a living and succeed and do this year after year, that kind of disappeared. And I'm afraid that what may happen for mushing is that the middle will fall out. So you'll still have, you know, the very top teams, your CVs and your Jeff Kings and your Martin Boozers, and those people will be able to keep going year after year. And you'll still have the people, you know, sort of at the very bottom, the people who this is their bucket list thing. This is, you know, the doctors and the lawyers who save up for 20 years so that they can come to Alaska for a few years and train and qualify and run Iditarod. The people who are working class people are going to be really, really squeezed. So the people who are the solid middle of the pack people who run the race every year and put their heart and soul into it, even if they never quite manage to break into the top 20, especially now that the that people over 20th place are not going to be in the money. So I fear that it is going to become so difficult and so expensive for people to be able to attract sponsors and save up for it and, you know, just support having a kennel or support leasing a team. I fear that that group of people is going to fall out of the entire mushing community and will be left with the very, very good, you know, professional grade mushers and the hobbyists. And the heart of the race, I think, has always been the people in the middle who get better year after year, and maybe after 5 or 6 years they're able to break into the top 20. And I worry that without those people running the race year after year and getting better and getting more well-known, that that it will just be a race for really, you know, not rich people, but for really well-to-do teams and rich hobbyists.
Before you give your thoughts sort of as kind of a fan's perspective as, on how maybe you would move forward in terms of your following of the race, in regards to what you said about sort of the middle of the pack falling out, I think about the Yukon Quest. And, you know, it's the other 1,000-mile race. Obviously, it does not get near the publicity of the Iditarod, but routinely, there is only 25, maybe tops 30 teams running in that race every year. And you always have the powerhouses there at the top, you know, the Brent Sasses and the Alan Moores and, you know, UNEP and all of those folks that are, you know, at the top of their game all the time. But you always manage to see one of those more back-in-the-pack hobbyists, as you mentioned, teams there at the back that often struggle on that trail, and they're often forced to scratch for one reason or another because they're not prepared to run a race like the Yukon Quest, which is much more of a professional-geared type race. You know, somebody with a lot of experience, a lot of time on the trail, a lot of, you know, hardened experience on the trail compared to Iditarod, where we don't want to say it's easier, but it's a much much easier format. I know it's the wrong word, but it's an easier format for those type of back of the packers or hobbyists, as you call them, to get down the trail with, you know, 15 or so checkpoints and, you know, all kinds of fan support and volunteers and all that. It's just a much different race. So my question to you, Alex, would it be a bad thing if the Iditarod did end up being more like the Quest in regards to, you know, a much smaller purse, much smaller sponsors, a much smaller field on the trail? It may become a more exciting race to follow. I don't know. What are your thoughts about Isran now with all of its sort of logistics and economics and all of that, and then put that in place of Iditarod? Do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's probably a bad thing. I think, you know, what differentiates the Iditarod is that it's the big dog. It's the Super Bowl. It's the, you know, it's the real sort of marquee event in sled dog racing. And I think if you take some of those things away from it that make it the marquee event, like having a much bigger purse, having a larger field, then I think it becomes just a different race. It becomes, you know, another 1,000-mile dog race. And not to say that that is in any way easy, but I think it would take a lot of the glamour away from it.
So what are your thoughts as a fan moving forward? And my first question to you is, if things really began to develop, as we mentioned them, you know, with the smaller field of mushers, you know, so on and so forth, or even a change in the way that mushing is done, as we talked about the dryland races or people watching much more sprint mushing. And I know that does not get any of the coverage like Iditarod or the Quest does. And there's hundreds, if not thousands, of sprint races all across the world, and of course in North America, and even here in Alaska. And the reason I ask that is I think about, again, sort of that compare and contrast with other sports. Of course, we have minor league baseball, and we have D-League in basketball, and we have indoor football, and all of these other sort of secondary-type leagues or secondary connotations of the same sport that very few people are interested in or watch. As a fan, would those any of those interest you at all? And if so, why or why not?
Yeah, I think I have started paying more attention to a lot of the qualifying races and a lot of the smaller races because they've become a lot more accessible in the past few years. And what that means is that there are a lot more races which have the GPS trackers, so it's easier to to pay attention to them. But I want to go back to the analogy you had with the minor league baseball. And one of the things that minor league baseball learned and does incredibly well and very effectively is they learned how to make how to differentiate their games and how to make them more fun and how to bring in additional elements that would make it easier for fans to interact and to have more of a fun experience, to make up for the fact perhaps that, you know, they weren't watching ball players who were as good as some of the major league ball players. So looking at that analogy, if there is a way that some of the smaller races and some of the qualifying races can bring a little bit more elements that would encourage fan engagement, and that could be something as simple as, you know, having additional cameras, having cameras at checkpoints, having people who are at the checkpoints interviewing the mushers as they come in. And if there's a real concerted effort to do some things like that, that would make it easier to follow the races and more fun to follow the races. And, you know, just as Iditarod has in the past few years, they've had their, they've had people writing on Iditarod.com about the race. They've had a lot more video, a lot more interviews, a lot more stuff that you can feel like you're getting more involved with the race. And I think that's the direction that is going to really need to be followed, not only for the smaller races, but for Iditarod itself, to really keep fans engaged. And, you know, for better or worse, we live in a social media world, and we like having video. We like having easy access to things. And, you know, unfortunately, we also like having endless disagreements and arguments online. But that all adds up to a lot more engagement. And I think that's something that the sport and the individual races are going to have to really embrace and get behind.
You know, you brought up an interesting point about that video and social media. I had a guest on, his name was Cale Casey. He is the writer and producer of a documentary called Dog Power, and it's about sprint mushing and all of the ways that folks follow and just fanatics of that type of mushing. And we talked quite a bit on his interview here on Dog Works Radio, on Mushing Radio, about how cool it would be to bring in things like drone coverage of sprint races on a relatively shorter course and have drones in the air following the mushers down the trail and that sort of thing. And I think we talked a little bit about doing that on like the Fur Rondi, which runs through the streets of Anchorage, and how cool that would be. Another way would be Facebook Live interactions. More and more people are using that sort of thing, either on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, or those sort of instant type videos where people can watch in real time or in live time. I think if more and more of that happened, it would be a much better benefit for the sport in terms of engagement. And you mentioned minor league baseball, and even in major leagues, that's all of the things that are happening around the game that are keeping fans engaged. I know you and I talked about Major League Baseball a couple of weeks ago, and I had mentioned going to a Braves game at a brand new stadium, and it was everything that was happening around the game that kept our interest. You know, the things going on the scoreboard, the trivia, and all of this stuff that was happening outside of the game itself is what kept the fans in the seats, and they were giving away, you know, hats and bobbleheads and all this kind of stuff to really keep folks engaged. And I think in order for sort of us to move into the 21st century with mushing, I think more of that has to happen, because not only does that bring awareness and fans to the sport and good PR, which we definitely need in this sport, but it also brings us into the new realm of mushing. You know, I don't think that we can do things that we've done for the last 100 plus years in the way that the sport has sort of evolved over that time. You know, you and I talk about it all the time, how much different the Iditarod is now, even from two decades ago, or of course in the start, where nobody followed the race. You know, you might have heard about it in the newspaper on Sunday when you picked up the Washington Post or whatever, and you would hear about, you know, whoever, Rick Swenson winning in whatever he did, or Susan Butcher's story in, you know, the New York Times or whatever like that. But it just wasn't covered as it was today. And I think that that's good and bad. Of course, there wasn't near the controversies brewing at that time, and there wasn't as much of an outlet for positive and negative expression when the races were covered in that manner. Again, I'll give you the last minute or so to sort of close out the show. Any closing thoughts in regards to this and sort of the future of mushing aside from PR, just sort of those humanistic sides of it that we may or may not have a whole lot of control over?
You know, I just want to underline something that you said. We've talked a little bit about drones and the use of drones in the past, and I think that you have this exactly right. This is something that is going to be so important to do in the future, and drone technology is getting much less expensive, and it's something that is really viable and has just become viable and accessible in the past couple of years. And I think back to what got me interested in mushing, and it was always, you know, these pictures of seeing the dogs and seeing the dog teams out in the wilderness. And if we can do something that will get even more pictures and video and showing the dogs doing this thing that they absolutely and completely love, that is going to be incredibly helpful. And I think that's really going to drive a lot of interest and a lot of fan support for the sport.
And Alex, if you don't mind, I have one other piece that I need to say that I think is probably the absolutely most important aspect of this whole thing. Aside from the weather, aside from economics, it needs to become more about the dogs. You know, I'm tired of hearing the musher stories. I'm tired of hearing them complain. I'm tired of hearing them either promoting themselves or putting others down. We need to talk more about the dogs. I could sit in a coffee shop with a total stranger and tell them story, and I know any other musher could do this. I could sit there and tell them stories about 38 sled dogs in my yard right now without ever, in terms of being a musher, I could give their histories, their bios, their likes, their dislikes, how they run, their coats, their moms, their dads, their stories, all of that. If we just shared those stories, there's 1,600 dogs on Iditarod every year. We only hear about the lead dogs. We only hear about the Golden Harness winners. We only hear about, unfortunately, the dogs that have trouble on the trail or unfortunately have injuries or die or get sick. We only hear so few stories about the dogs. I think that's what we need to do first and foremost, is make it about the dogs, tell the dog stories, get away from all this musher hype and controversy revolving around the human side. Now, I know it's very easy to follow the musher. Again, compare and contrast. It's easy to talk about Tom Brady because he's the poster boy of the NFL, and not very many people know about, you know, the right guard or the center or the middle linebacker or the kicker or the punter. We all know about the poster boys or poster gals of a sport, and that's who we gravitate to. But we have to talk more about the dogs, and I challenge you, Alex, and I will try to do the same. I think we need to tell more dog stories on our show and less musher-driven stories than we have in the past. And we've been on the air a long time. You and I have been hosting this since 2012 together, almost at least every couple of weeks, and during Iditarod every single night. And we don't talk enough about the dogs ourselves. What are your thoughts on that? Then we'll close.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. It's a big challenge. It's a big challenge, but I think it's one that we should take on. And, you know, I just want to encourage our fans, If one of the things I discovered when I first started learning about Iditarod and when I was making my movie Mush, is sometimes I would meet mushers and I would not have any idea what to say to them. And anytime I was in a position like that, I would just say, "Tell me about your dogs." And instantly their eyes would light up and they would become less tense about what I was really doing or what I really wanted to know. And they would just talk about their dogs. So I would encourage all of our fans, if you meet a musher and you're not quite sure what to say to them, ask about the dogs. Because as you said,
right,
they will have stories. They'll talk to you for an hour about their dogs. And, and I think that you're right. When we put more focus on the dogs and when we really, concentrate on them, that's something we're missing.
And speaking of that, we're going to come out with a series next month that talks about the Serum Run, which was all about the dog. If the dogs were not there, Serum Run would have happened. Of course, there was very colorful characters along the trail, but we know two very famous dogs. Alex, anything in closing, and then we'll be off the air.
Just want to say it's a very interesting time, and things are changing. But hopefully, the sport of mushing will continue and will persevere. And it might look a little bit different in 10 years, but, if you look at how it looked 10 years ago, that's different too. So these are challenging times, but I think a lot of people are going to rise up and meet the challenge.
There you go. For my friend and co-host Alex Stein, this is Robert Forto. We'll see you guys next time.